It's Ken Bergen here, and welcome to the Hospo Reset podcast. Each episode, I explore trends, innovation, and smart thinking in the hospitality industry with a particular focus on restaurants, cafes, and food service. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hosporeset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with me on LinkedIn and on Twitter. Hi, it's Ken Bergen here from Hospo Reset podcast. Today I'm talking with Graham McCormack from the Food Equity Group. We're talking about outsourcing and labour saving in modern food service. Lots of talk about labour shortages, lots of talk about new ways of delivering food to people, and Graham's got some great insights on all of that. Graham, great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Great. So just tell us a bit about your background in food and the food business that you're in and Food Equity Group.
Yeah, sure, mate. So, yeah, I've been in the industry for decades, way back into food franchising as a franchisee, and then built and sold some businesses, ended up in manufacturing. So I started to see the industry, particularly from a food service point of view, from sort of 360 degrees. And then went out of that business, ended up founding a consulting business, which then ended up converting into Food Equity Group, which I'm currently the CEO of, and that business has been around for a bit over 3 years now. I've got a fantastic team of culinary development team, a creative design, operations, supply chain. So we identify gaps in whether they be in food service or retail, and we develop product from scratch and bring them to market through contract manufacturing and our own supply chain.
Yeah, when I first met you, it must be 4 or 5 years ago, I think, even at that stage, identifying QSR groups that, you know, had ambitions for better quality food but didn't have the staff or the skills to be able to execute that. Now, you were out travelling before Christmas and you were visiting pubs and clubs and restaurants all around the countryside and got a really good insight into some of the issues that businesses are facing now. Tell us a bit about what you found and who you talked to, what they were telling you.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, certainly on the road. It's something that I really enjoy doing with our sales team, to sort of get out and engage directly with our customers and really get an understanding and try and get a clear understanding of their business and particularly their needs. And as we all know, it's been very, very trying times for the industry the last few years. And let's be brutally honest, it was pretty trying and telling in the years leading up to COVID and the whole pandemic thing. So and that I guess that time period that has lapsed has really shone a light on some real challenges and weaknesses across the industry, and we're really only seeing that sort of come to bear in the harshest possible way right now. So yeah, but getting out and traveling across not only metropolitan areas but regional areas, the message is very consistent and very clear, and it sits in very two distinct buckets. One is that the expectations of consumers and customers, if we talk about your classic regional pub, you know, the customers that are coming through those doors have still got, you know, very high levels of expectations of not only around service but quality of food and diversity of offer. And, you know, furthermore, them trying to maintain levels of, product and menu that is on trend. So there's a lot of challenges that obviously come with that. So the customer expectation levels haven't abated at all.
I guess TV drives a lot of that too.
It does, mate. Yeah,
but food shows and those sorts.
Well, food.
Well.
Yeah, absolutely. Food shows and you know, things like social media, things like Instagram, where you just got readily, you know, by the minute, almost by the second, access to the most innovative, cutting edge food that's being consumed in the Lower East Side of New York. You know, it's a very, very, very challenging landscape within which a lot of these venues operate. You know, you can picture a young couple going to the local pub, and on the way in the taxi, they're online and you know, they're just flicking through their feed, and their levels of expectation around what they're about to experience, notwithstanding it won't be a direct line, it's certainly subconscious. And so you walk in and you expect your burrito to look a certain way.
Yeah, Texas.
Exactly, mate. So it's when you look at it, and we do this in our business, when you look at the industry in channels or in certain parts in isolation, but when you most importantly look at it holistically, it's a very, very challenging environment in which to meet expectations. So those expectations from a consumer's point of view walking through the door with their local pub as they go in for a meal on a Friday or Saturday. That hasn't abated throughout this challenging period. But what has happened on the other side is obviously, and we're all acutely aware of it, is the de-skilling that's going on in these kitchens around the country. And that is, you know, a distinct lack of, you know, adequately qualified culinary professionals who can run these kitchens and deliver on menus that are going to meet expectations. Oh, and by the way, make some money on the way through. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when you throw all that together, it's a very challenging thing. And I guess if there was one thing that I saw and I experienced firsthand with our customers and other businesses that we're engaged with, is that divide, is that gap, is there's a huge gap between what the customers are expecting, what the businesses require in terms of the types of food that are being, you know, the margin expectations, the revenue expectations, and then the actual skill that is in the kitchen that is being relied upon to, and there's a huge gap there.
Yeah, and people, I mean, there's an endless talk about more training and more apprentices and more subsidies for apprentices and all those sorts of things. It's not going to handle it, though, is it? I mean, you know, I think we're both in favour of more training and developing our workforce, but that is short term and even longer term. It's just changed, really, hasn't it?
It has fundamentally changed, mate. And I agree. I'm a real advocate for, you know, career pathway into the industry. I think it's an industry we've both been involved in for many, many years. So we love it, and we want to see there be genuine pathway to career, particularly from a culinary point of view. But you're right, mate, call a spade, things have changed. And I think it's not necessarily being perceived as, you know, the career pathway of choice for a lot of young people for many different reasons.
And in a way, I listened to a really interesting podcast about supply chain in food service. It was actually a UK one. Mm. And the woman who was talking about it, you know, massive amount of experience, was talking about how, you know, this issue, supply chain, is just like, oh, isn't that just getting on the phone and ordering? Or, you know, I mean, the skills involved in all of that, which we're going to kind of unwrap a little bit as we're talking to, I mean, these are the modern skills that a young apprentice should be learning about too, you know, about specifying product and buying all sorts of high-quality product and how we manage that sorts of things and negotiation and all those sort of things. In a way, I'd rather know that they are kind of getting well-trained and experienced in that rather than maybe some finer points on Thai curries or Indian spices.
Yeah, I think the perception of those roles needs to change, and perhaps it is changing, and I'm not close enough to it, but there needs to, in my opinion, there needs to be a whole-of-business approach to those roles. Mm. And when I say whole-of-business, to your point, it's, of course, you need to understand how to make a curry or produce a dish or whatever the case may be, but also having an understanding of the commercials, understanding how the systems can support the day-to-day operation of the kitchen and the business as a whole, but then extending that into, you know, how does the business engage around community marketing or you know, just having a holistic understanding. You don't have to be an expert on every aspect, but having a holistic understanding.
It also actually gives the owner of the business, who's often not the chef, especially in a larger place like a pub, not the chef, and sometimes a bit nervous about, you know, going in the kitchen and I get my head bitten off or whatever. Mm. But, I mean, they are experts, you know, they got a lot of experience in supply and negotiation and quantities and costing and margins and all those sorts of things. In a way, what you're talking about is kind of putting those higher up the hierarchy in a way, even more valuable if we can accept the fact that the culinary skills are not going to be there. And we've got to find some other ways to deliver that delicious food that the young couple in the taxi are hoping they're going to be delicious.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't agree more. There needs to be, and I can see that there is a mindset change.
Yeah. So we've all been locked down. We've been eating out way less than we ever wanted to in the last couple of years. You're talking about social media and TV and those sort of things driving it. Have you seen with, say, QSRs a change in what they're serving over this time too? Are they keeping up with People's change.
Oh, look, I think you've hit the nail on the head there to a point, Ken. They're just trying to keep up. And obviously, you know, the period of time, let's call it the last 2 years that the industry's been through, you know, in the decades I've been involved, yeah. And I suspect you've never seen anything like it. So
we tell our grandchildren about
it. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah, I sort of lived through the Depression kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think we're just in a highly unique space and point in time. In terms of, you know, what's bubbling to the surface around QSRs or anyone for that particular matter, in terms of trends and emerging trends and so on and so forth, I really think that a lot of these businesses, and certainly what we see, is that they've tended to bunker and they've tended to, you know, cocoon a little bit in terms of...
So innovation hasn't been a top priority. It's been
Exactly. It's let's just bunker down. Let's ride it out. Mm. And you know, even now as we speak to today, the challenges around supply chain, which you mentioned before, you know, the fact that the Omicron, you know, variant of COVID has just put a wave through supply chain, and whether that be in food service or into retail, you know, the bottom line is it's shone a very bright light onto how fragile the supply chain is in Australia. And I'm talking sort of, you know, from the farm through to the venue or the shelf. You know, there's you know, it's very obvious that there's some real fragility around that.
So words like sustainability and healthy eating have been kind of a priority for lots of people. Well, certainly they talk about it a lot. Is this kind of having to take back seat now when we're just kind of trying to get any eggs rather than just best eggs or you know, low how happy the chickens are or
yeah, sure. Oh, look, I would have thought that it's certainly been that message has certainly been diluted over the past, you know, little while. And, you know, in terms of, you know, that part of the market or that part of the segment, look, my opinion is, and I guess, I don't have access to everyone's product mix reports or their sales reports, but our read on it is there is always going to be a place for those types of ingredients or products in the market. For lots of reasons, you know, people have to eat, you know, gluten-free products, or they have to eat, you know, whatever. And then there's the products of choice. You know, do I want to go with a free range or, you know, RSPCA approved or whatever grade of sustainability that meets your own personal expectations? So there is always going to be that aspect to the market. But as to whether it moves the needle compared to what I would call, you know, the mainstream, I think that's debatable. But having said that, I think it's very, very important that, you know, and I know we do in our business, that we acknowledge and that we do whatever we possibly can to include those types of products or those types of ingredients. Yeah,
maybe it's just stripped out of some of the hype and some of the promises that were actually never being delivered on.
It's a challenging space, the compliance around it, and we have products that require, you know, high levels of compliance around some of that type of product or ingredient, and we conform to all that. It's very important that we do that. But yeah, as to you know, as to the whether it moves the needle in a big way is a little bit of a question mark, particularly, you know, in the, I guess, environment and world we live in, as you say.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So tell us about this new low-skill kitchen. I mean, a few years back that was being called the knifeless kitchen, the idea you just open bags, which sounded a bit dreary.
but
you're taking it to another level. So we're thinking about, you know, the country town where, you know, well, the challenge is to keep young kids in the town, let alone working in kitchens. But, you know, the skill shortage is real and the lack of staff. So what's... And once maybe we had four people in the kitchen, now we're trying to do it with 2.5 or 3 people. So what are some of the elements that make up, you know, again, the couple in the taxi who are coming for dinner, expectations, we're keeping them high, but we're going to deliver something that's, going to be much simpler to put on the plate.
Yeah, sure. So, and I guess our business has been built and we constantly innovate around what I call super value-added products.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're talking about, you know, fully cooked, you know, sous vide cooked, you know, pork ribs that really, I'll just give you one example, you know, a product like that, a brand range of ours called Smoky Addiction. So, you know, fully cooked pork ribs that simply just need to be reheated and served. Okay, so the opportunity for those types of products And we're seeing it firsthand every day that our business just continues to grow and grow and grow off the back of the type of scenario that you just explained. So, and from our perspective, from our business perspective, we will continue to develop and innovate products in that space, because we don't see that gap that I described earlier and those issues, the de-skilling going on in the kitchen, we don't see that abating anytime soon. In fact, we're forecasting that it will actually get worse before it gets better. These types of products are becoming more and more, there's more and more demand around them. So the products are one thing.
It's ready to cook. It's actually pre-cooked. A lot of your stuff as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's the absolute importance for us is that they are of the highest quality. Our products, and I can only speak for our products, but our products will never be the cheapest. Okay, so we're never ever going to win on price necessarily. Okay, but they should always win on quality, and the price should be pretty close to our competitors. So. And some of our products, for example, Wicked Witch, our sandwich fillings range, we don't really have a direct sort of like-for-like exact competitor. There's other sort of similar things, but there's nothing really as comprehensive as what we've developed there. So we'll always drive. We always have to lead with quality, but obviously price is always going to be an important part of that conversation.
Just to unpack that word, quality, a protein item, what are the elements that make that up? So say the pork or the chicken or something like that. I
mean, yeah, sure.
Well, what's the difference between the cheap raw chicken and the more expensive raw chicken, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. Chicken's obviously a more challenging one in terms of if you get down to the raw ingredient. And then obviously there's the whole provenance piece, which we touched on before. But if we talk about, let's just use that example of the pork ribs, well, there's obviously the quality and grade of raw, and really at the end of the day, it is the same fundamental, I guess, strategy or mindset that we're putting into developing products en masse as it would be if you're in a hatted restaurant kitchen. You know, it's all about quality in quality, which then obviously can result in the product being a little bit more expensive. But really, if we're going to meet the expectations of the couple in the taxi on the way to the gastropub, we need to...
I always find that such a funny term.
It is a funny term. I agree with that.
So I know the UK, they use it.
They do.
Gastro, we think of something much
more. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. No, I'm with you. So, let's call it a premium pub, then we need to make sure that the quality of that product and that food is of the highest grade. So... The saying we have, Ken, in our business is, and we say this to our customers, is that the skill is in the bag, okay? So the skill that they would normally have to have in the kitchen, in prep, mise en place and employ and spend money on, that skill is actually in the bag, and that product is going to meet the expectations of their customers at a medium to high level. So, but they don't need necessarily to have that level of skill in the kitchen in order to prepare. So obviously there's going to be a bit of a trade-off there around price, and it's going to be a little bit more expensive. But the smart operators and the customers that we have engaged with understand that the money that they're saving on labour and waste and consistency and all that sort of stuff, you know, all those things that are always challenging working from raw ingredients and recipe-based operations can be offset, you know, by the fact that they might be paying a little bit extra, but it's certainly well worth that added investment. So it's a combination, just to go back to your original question, it's a combination of those what I call, you know, super value-added products and systems and process. So equally, you know, there are products, there's equipment out there that already exists and I know of that are about to, you know, launch in the country, ovens and all sorts of things which are highly advanced and can provide these kitchen real advancement around their capabilities in the face of not having the skill.
Because the traditional low-skill cooking was the deep fryer. If it's brown, it's cooked, nothing to think about. Or the microwave, which is, you know, blew it to pieces and you end up with mush. What's the new equipment that you're excited about?
Well, you know, we've had, you know, if you talk from an ovens perspective, but our business has a fantastic relationship with Unox, for example. And I understand that it's not a commercial relationship. We just have a long-standing industry relationship, a bit like yourself and I. So, and I know, you know, we work with with their equipment. They've got a Speed Pro oven, for example, which is a sort of super bit of kit, you know, combination of sort of combi oven cooking and microwave technology, you know, fantastic bit of kit, which does a whole heap of...
So we get the fast cooking things. And we get the crispy, the crunchy as well.
Exactly. And the scope of that is, you know, is it's not endless, but it's very, very broad. Oh, and by the way, you can pre-program it. You know, you can put your ribs in. You can put our, because we've done this, we put our ribs in and we've pre-programmed it to number three, and you can press number three and they come out, you know, in 2.5 minutes, and they're absolutely perfect. So you know, an extension to that will be, and I know the Unox guys are bringing out the SpeedX oven this year. So again, you know, we've had
SpeedX
a little
look. As against Speed Pro, what's
yeah, exactly.
Faster so or bigger or
yeah,
what's the
yeah, yeah, bigger, faster, better, sexier, all that okay. sort of stuff. You know, it's an Italian company, so what else would you expect? Yeah. So, but yeah, we've had a little look. We've been privy to and privileged to have a bit of a look under the hood with that, mm-hmm. and it's a serious bit of kit. Mm. So, and you know, it's does everything you could ever want, you know, a combi oven to do, but it does it in a fraction of the time, and it's self-cleaning, and it's all this sort of stuff. So I don't want to sound like I'm a sales pitch for Unox, but it's an amazing bit of kit that I can see being put into some of these types of venues and kitchens, the pre-programmed, and it's plug and play. So I guess the message, you know, to those who are listening to this is that there are products out there that are super value added, and not just ours, there are others, and there is equipment out there which is highly advanced in technology. Again, you know, not just Unox, I'm sure there are others. Yeah. But the main point is to spend the time, and it's not really a hard search, to go and find and engage with those businesses.
Yeah, and the one thing I know from, you know, I've met the Unox people and from other ovens and things, they are dying to come out and show you how to use
it. Of course.
And look at the menu and help you rework. They're so frustrated when they don't get asked, you know.
Of course, mate.
They're so happy when they are.
Exactly. And we sit it down. Yeah. I guess that's probably why our two businesses are so well sort of connected, and it's that like-mindedness, okay? Yeah. Because similarly, my sales guys and sales team, yeah, they you know, Greg, one of my area sales licensees, you know, he drove to Ballina last week from Sydney to develop a new menu for a pub up there. We were going to use, you know, a number of our products.
Yeah.
You know, but he loved it. He absolutely loved it. You know what I mean? So I guess the message is there are solutions out there, whether they be products, whether they be equipment, combination of both. And there's also very willing businesses.
You're also making me think that really when we think menu, you know, we think, okay, well, we can't get someone who will be able to make these sources, so we'll buy the source in, et cetera, but actually we've got to rethink menu from the ground up, so we're not kind of just substituting, because often when it's substitute, you think, well, it's kind of not quite as good. But if we design from the ground up with whole new menu, whole new products, I mean, not throwing out things that people love, but that's really the way forward. Like you're saying with this, your guy with the pub owner, they're kind of like starting from scratch almost.
Yeah, I guess they are, mate. And I guess what I'm, part of the message for me is that there are any number of businesses in food service who have the resource, the capability, and most importantly, the willingness to engage directly with venues, whether it be a small hole-in-the-wall cafe right through to a major registered club or anything in between. What I would encourage everyone to do if they're listening and they're in that space is to reach out and connect and say, hey, can you give me a hand? And if someone says, no, I can't, I would suggest that you move on and find someone who can, because there are any number of businesses. You know, ours is one, the Unox boys are another one, but there's any number of businesses like ours.
It's kind of a new touch point, really, isn't it? If actually they're not prepared, well, you know,
move on.
I'm not talking to you anyway. Move on.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You've also kind of, with the staffing thing, I mean, when we're talking about these ovens and, you know, they're complex. Well, they're complex behind the screen, but they're designed to be as easy as an iPod. I remember a chef saying that to me years ago about combis. They've got to be easy as an iPod to use. But, you know, again, the let's say it's a young person or maybe it's someone who's not been in Australia for very long, but they got to be able to kind of follow the coloured buttons and follow the timer and press, they know that for this dish it's number 3 button, and when the bell rings that means open the door and take it out. Not to dumb it down, but it's a kind of new skill set. And if someone can manage World of Warcraft, you know, and Spotify on their phone, they can probably do a pretty good job managing these screens as well.
Absolutely no question in my mind. And again, you know, if I just talk briefly back to that SpeedX oven that's coming out with Unox, but that's that has a voice activation, the function, you know, where the, you know, the chef can walk past and say, you know, I don't know, cook lamb shanks, and all of a sudden it just jumps into so the technology that, as you're saying, the technology that the younger people in the industry, not even so the younger people, mate, I'd call you and I, you know, the technology that you and I use on a daily basis is being implemented and initiated into these types of equipment. So there should be some.
I'm very interested in robotics in kitchens and for serving dishes and all the rest. And I saw one of the companies, Bear Robotics, who have, you know, the little robots that take the food out to the table and take the plates back and all the rest.
All right.
And they're putting some of those into hospitality courses because they're saying, you know, the modern hospo student who comes out has got to be able to kind of manage those as well. Absolutely.
Of course. It's just the way of it.
So anything else for our equipment? We've got the speed oven. We've got, well, there's fryers and fryers. I think we definitely need to upgrade our fryers. There's things that'll, you know, drop the basket down and raise it up at a certain amount of time as well. Anything around refrigeration you've seen or other control systems?
Nothing that really necessarily springs to mind. I guess the other thing that in terms of systems, this is not cooking equipment, but just general sort of operational sort of management tools. You know, there's obviously, you know, lots and lots of different types of, you know, cloud-based software and you know, menu, you know, costings management, and, you know, the sort of the cook in the books kind of, you know, programs that are out and about. Well, I guess I'd make the point, and we as a business have also operated restaurants previously, so we've been right at the coalface with all that. Yeah, my recommendation is to go and engage with that side of the industry. There is, and that extends obviously into rostering management tool. There's a whole heap of them, as I know you know.
Ordering.
So I guess the message there is go and invest the time, go and research what's available, because some of them can be very, very powerful. And you don't have to go and get the all singing, all dancing version. You just get something that's adequate and relevant for your type of business, your scale of business. But
and they can throw up exceptions, you know, like temperatures are out of whack, or wage
all
costs this week are out of whack.
All those sorts of things,
or, you know, timing, cooking times last night. Wow, what happened there? All those sorts of things.
Yeah, so I really do think that investment in time, and it doesn't have to be a big, you know, capital outlay for some of this stuff. Some of these systems are pretty cost effective. Mm. So yeah, I do think that sort of thing is somewhat underplayed. And I, you know, I certainly know of many businesses that have these systems but don't use them and don't optimize them. And it's because I just don't think the operators necessarily understand that the power and the impact that they can provide if they're done and managed correctly.
Yeah. And in a way, just from our discussion so far, I'm getting a sense that the food is, I mean, it's got to be delicious, and again, the couple in the taxi back to, but the food's actually kind of lower down the chain of importance behind, you know, the purchasing and the equipment and the time management and the recruiting people with a kind of project management kind of mindset, you know, the people who are quick on their feet and efficient rather than necessarily haute cuisine as their priority.
Yeah, I think, look, for me, the food is always, you know, and the quality, we certainly don't want to disappoint our couple in the taxi in any way, shape or form, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who transact and make the business a success or not. So the quality of that food is paramount. The service of that food is paramount at the front line. But I guess the the importance of engaging the industry around what types of value-added, super value-added products are available. That work needs to be done. You can't be sitting there with a box of raw ingredients and no skill.
Yeah.
And expect to meet the expectations.
And look, it goes down to the simplest things. I remember a trade show a few years ago, you were showing us all how to do an amazing bacon and egg roll. Not just any bacon and egg roll. You know, I mean, your classic kind of simple ladies' breakfast. But, you know, there's rolls and rolls, and some of them are pretty ordinary. I think it could go.
So it's for me, it's you can never drop your standards in terms of quality of the food or the service. But you've got to commit to spending the time reaching into the industry and connecting and networking and just doing the work around finding where are the food solutions that are going to meet the expectations of our couple. And then once you've got those or in parallel with doing that is what equipment, you know, can I engage in and what equipment can I bring into the business that is going to, you know, help me deliver on all of those expectations. It's those two things. You got to do the work.
Whereas the business owner or the well-paid head chef, it's a kind of different. It's a project management task as their priority now.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point you talk about. You just mentioned there about, you know, the head chef and so we've got any number of venues or customers who have very, very highly qualified head chefs, okay, and they know how to make amazing pork ribs, for example, right? But what they're seeing is that we've got a beautiful big pub way out west in rural New South Wales, and lovely lady who's the head chef. There's her; she's very, very highly skilled, so she could easily make all the products that we provide to them. But after her, there's nobody.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's three dishes. Right, who two of whom she's training in how to make garlic breads and entrees, and you know what I mean. So the skill
and how to run the screen on the
exactly. So so what's happening is she's actually buying product from us, which she could, if she had all the time, she could make, right. But she doesn't have the time because she's having to spend that time.
Actually making a better quality of life for those people too, because they kind of live. We've both been running restaurants. We know it's a 7-day. You can't switch off the brains. You know, is everything okay? What's happened? Someone's away, et cetera, et cetera. But if you can build in some redundancy, like, you know, with the products.
Exactly.
And, the people who are kind of maybe not the same skills as her, but the place will keep going and the ordering will be done properly, even if I'm having a week away.
That's right. And the product will be consistent and there's no food safety issues or there shouldn't be. You know what I mean? All that sort of stuff. You know, those types of products and those types of solutions, whether they be the product or the equipment, aren't necessarily just exclusive for kitchens who've got no skill.
Yeah.
Right. Or very limited skill. Those solutions are also equally applied to kitchens who do have skill. Right, but don't have enough skill to cover everything. Or, by the way, don't have enough skill to cover 7 days trade.
And then chef can do those things that everyone says she should be doing, like taking great photos and making the Instagram really spectacular. You know, but because that's the sort of thing I'd love to do that, but I haven't got the time. Running a little cooking demo once a month. You know, which all that sort of thing, it takes time, that stuff.
You've got it. Yeah. Or focus on your own specialty dish.
Yeah.
Or dishes or specials or whatever. So it's just, so those types of products can and equipment solutions can all of a sudden create additional time.
The space, Now we can do an amazing, I love desserts, an amazing dessert menu, but we never had time to do that before. I always love talking to you, Graham. It's really inspiring. How do you keep track of trends and latest developments? I mean, none of us have been able to travel, and I know you used to do a fair bit of that overseas, which, but I guess you know, you're online and you talk to people and keep your ears open.
For us, it's, and you know, me personally, but the business holistically, first and foremost, it's a passion. So you're genuinely interested in it.
Yes.
Okay. So
the curiosity is strong.
Exactly. So that's, you need to have that. And I suspect anyone that's been in the industry for as long as you and I have, we've got that coursing through our veins.
Or we went somewhere else.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. So that's first and foremost. Look, for us, it's a combination of, you know, your classic sort of industry reporting, you know, around what's emerging, what's trending, what's happening in the UK, what's happening in the US, what's happening wherever. So that it's a combination of getting, you know, what I would call traditional industry reports. But then layered into that is also, as we said at the outset, going and actually engaging with, in a meaningful way, at the front line, okay, and actually getting out there and talking to customers and talking to venue managers and chefs and customers, whoever it might be, actually getting out there and experiencing it firsthand and hearing it firsthand, okay?
And so that's, I guess the feedback loops can be pretty fast now too. I mean, if they're using their point of sale even half properly, that information could be on your phone, you know, within minutes if need be. If you're wanting to try, you know, three different things and you reckon one might fly and two might not, but, you know, the truth is the data's there. The truth is there in ways that was not there before.
Yeah, no, totally. And then you blend in, you know, your social medias, your you know, your focus groups. We do focus group work with our products before they they launch, and so it's a combination and a blend of all those things. I guess the summary is you can't assume that that the information is going to just fall in your lap. It's out there, as you say, it's out there, but you have to make a conscious decision to go and get it.
Look in less familiar places too.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a blend of all this, you know. Tonight I'm, you know, heading out for dinner with them to a different restaurant. Why? Because it's a bit different and unique. And of course, I'll be there having a fun social time.
Yeah.
Right?
Deep into the kitchen.
Exactly.
As well.
Exactly. But I'll always be ordering something that's a little bit different on the menu.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of all those things. But then you need a funnel to be able to channel that information. There's so much information that you gather.
Yeah.
Consciously and subconsciously, and we have a formal process in our business where we go through ideations and you know,
well,
all that
curation
sort of stuff,
so. Is part of your particular extra level of skill, isn't it? Really, you know, sorting, you know, kind of quaint and interesting from actual practical and something.
Yeah, how do you turn a beautiful little ramekin of something into, you know, 10 pallets of it? And have it still taste the same at the same quality and so on and so forth. So yeah, and there's a real challenge to that. So but that's how we try and stay connected.
Yeah.
We just try and get out as much as we can. We just try and have as much information inputted to us as we can. But then we've got to, that's one thing, harvesting all that data, but you've then got to be able to collate it and optimize it and turn it into something.
Brilliant. Great talking to you. Really enjoy that. So where do people find you online and make contact with you?
Oh, look, just go to foodequitygroup.com, our website. You can jump on there and
put that in the show notes for sure.
Yeah, so, you can jump on the website. You can learn a little bit more about us. I always constantly feel like that website is outdated, which it currently right is, because we're about to do a whole heap of retail launches. So, and that's just the nature of our business, very dynamic and fast-paced and moving forward. So, go to the website. You know, you can find me on LinkedIn if anyone would like to connect for whatever reason. More than happy to,
Great talking, Graham. Thanks.
Thanks again, Ken.
Thanks for joining me. I hope you're feeling inspired after listening to this episode. You'll find the show notes and links for today's episode on your podcast app and look for the link at the top of the hospo-reset.com website. Don't forget to subscribe to the weekly Hospo Reset newsletter and connect with Ken Bergen on LinkedIn and on Twitter.